Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to this last session of the conference. My name is Pascal Ménoret. I'm the Khaled bin Abdallah Al Saud Professor of Modern Arabic Studies, and I've been asked to chair. It's a pleasure to be with you here. And what we'll do is that basically we're going to give 15 minutes per participant, and the four presentations will be followed by a discussion by my colleague Professor Herzig, after which we'll open the floor for your participations and your questions. All right, so our first panelist today is Dr. Ramon Vega Piniella, who is currently a Lee Kong Chan Research Fellow at the National Library of Singapore. Ramon, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, estimated colleagues, it's a great honor to be here in this wonderful project, Ahan and the Sea, with the generous support of San Anthony's colleagues. I would like to thank you,
our host, and I acknowledge the research group of the Han Museum of the Yang and the Lee Kong Chan Research Fellowship of Singapore. Their support made this work possible. Today I invite you to travel with me into the waters of the early modern world. My central question is simple but powerful. Why was Bahan important for the Iberian Empire, and what does Peter Antonio de la Torre documents reveal about its global significance? So, first off, goal and interest. Let us begin with the magnet of empire, the goal. Juan de Rivera, the Jesuit, writing about the strategic landscape of the region, stated this wonderful phrase: all the nations of the world are moved by interest, which is the magnet of hearts. We see that for silver and gold, men have gone and go, even to the shadows of hell. This line holds well in the motto for the 16th century. Empires were built on precious metal. But Rivera also observed that in this region, one can find two more kinds of gold: condensed gold, that is species, and also white silk. But from the antiquity, the Malay Peninsula have been imagined as the Aurea Peronestus, the Golden Peninsula. Ptolemy played the name, likely drawing on earlier cartographers and Indian sources. Renaissance maps repeated the legend. Portuguese chroniclers like Duarte Barbosa claimed that the gold in Bahan could be collected almost without before. Now, the reality was not quite so dazzling, but, and this is an essential point, the belief itself shaped the action. Bahan matters because it was imagined as a place full of gold. And that sent us to the second stop, the encomienda mentality, another Iberian concept shaped their vision, the encomienda. An institution with roots of the medieval kingdom of Spain, an encomendero collected the tribute and oversaw the labor, also the digging of gold, and in theory protected and evangelized the people under this church, the encomendero. In practice, the system often produced exploitation. Felipe Guamán Bomba de Ayala, monumental Nueva Crónica y Nuevo Gobierno, was one of the many petitions asking the Spanish king to reform this abusive structure. Reforms followed. The new laws, las nuevas leyes, from 1542 abolished indigenous slavery in all these forms and declared that the encomienda would end upon the holder's death. Renaissance was fierce. The 1565 conspiracy for proclaiming Mexico independence, for example, was one of these main rebellions about it. Why does this matter for Southeast Asia? Because the Spanish carried the institution to the Philippines. Their royal local chiefs, encomenderos, and missionaries that created a fragile balance, indigenous communities were not passive. They negotiated a tribute, used clerical allies to resist the excess, and adapted forcing the alliances. This dynamic weakened the encomienda, would also gave voice to the same people who would later guide the Spanish not only in tribute, usually in chicken, rice, and blankets, but in navigation itself. as we shall see. We jump to the third stop, the imperial rivalities, Malacca, Manila. Let us now turn to the imperial rivalry. Since the little known Treaty of Alcazovas, 1479, Spain and Portugal, neighboring and maritime powers, had attempted to delimit their spheres overseas. Later, the Treaty of Tordesillas, 1494, and the Treaty of Zaragoza, 1599, extended these limits to a global scale. The Portuguese captured Malacca in 1511, making it the jewel of the Asian Empire. Chronicles notice that Han supported gold to Malacca, markets through the Chinese and the Japanese traders. And as Professor Santos Alves has emphasized, Malacca depends heavily on Pahang, on other things like food, mainly on rice. Meanwhile, the Spanish pursued a different path. In 1519, Magellan fleet departed its powerful voyage through traffic and circumnavigated the globe. Gaffetta, the expedition chronicle from Italy, explicitly mentioned Han. So you need to think about this. In this list of people joining the expedition, you have a 62% of Spanish, but the rest of the people were from other countries. As you can imagine, we can mention here Enrique de Malacca, but other people, Muslim and less than of Muslims, like Jorge Morisco, nowadays we don't know where they were from. So it's really important of this lingua, these translators were part of this empire, and also the Levantiscos from the post east of Spain, from the Mediterranean area, were many of the shipbuilders of the region. So we continue, because they were following the Chinese merchants to reach Manila and refounded it in 1571. It became the Spanish Malacca, attracting up where the American silver met Chinese silk. And once the Manila Galleon rule began, as a result, Manila attracted some of the Asia's most formidable pirates, including Limahong, who attacked the city in 1574. We will speak later about him. But there was a distinction. Portugal controlled the straits. Spain did not. Thus, Spain concentrated on the China trade and forgot about other areas. But that sent us to the fourth stop, the Iberian Union and the map of the world. In 1580, Spain and Portugal united under the Philip II for 6 decades to the last crisis to see empires as were to one crown, yet the connection had gaps. Macau, largely isolated and defensive, could not fully integrate with Manila. That was a really great rivalry that avoided the population. But the cartography reflected this Iberian knowledge. So the Jesuits, that information reached to the Ming court. And of course, Pahang appeared in many of these hybrid documents, as you can see. These marks were something vital. Pahang was not in the peripheral, it was a king of Asia. But why? Now we are going to reach to the heart of the matter. We are going to speak now about the Travesía de Pahang, our fifth stop, the passage of Pahang. We found the answer. In the cluster of documents involving all the themes, we have discussed gold and commendations, rivalry and alliance, Malacca, Manila, Antille Roads, spices, piracy, and of course Pahang. All converts in the proposal of Capitan Antonio de la Torre, writing in the late 1580s, advocating a joint Portuguese-Spanish campaign to conquer Sumatra. After the Castilian War over Brunei in 1578, Spain saw better strategic ground, now without arguing with the Portuguese, thanks to the Iberian Union. To unite both empires, de la Torre needed a viable shared route. This was the route. As you can read, we have the description that is not entirely accurate in the geography, but it gives you really key points and really interesting information about the population in Peau Islands, and also as Han, at the riverine center, and that's why they call this passage the passage of Pahang, because it was the way for them to measure when they reach or not to cross this arc. Also, they speak about the local religion and also the Canadian production that from there they will bring Philippines. So you can see the maps. And also, they mention in the documents many of the different damage and dangers that they can find by the pirates. The Portuguese-Azeris conflict with the Aze government, and also the robbers then of Bhutan. Where other figures like Inokyan and Lima Hong were waiting, the same one that was after like few years trying to conquer Manila. But they also have many problems, many other governments. As you can see, there is this really long, but it's not only thinking about like the Dutch and the British. They have many, many enemies, and they were taking care of this area of Singapore and reaching there through Pahang. For the joining expedition required special ships. As you can see, they mentioned 3 to 4 galleons, 2 Caribbean designed frigates, advanced vessels, 150 soldiers, and 50 sailors and gunners. We have some of the reproduction of these kind of ships that they were using in the area, because it was really important for us. From the point of view of the Navy, the Spanish Navy was quite special, because during 300 they were not only using the local ships, they were copying them and sending models back to Manila, and some of them they were sending back to Spain. So nowadays we have a really big collection. When the Spanish Navy Museum opened in 1842, 1/3 of the models that they have in exhibition were coming from Southeast Asia. And as you can imagine, they are also related with the documents, the mentions to hold the wheel, and also with really, really good information about the constructions and the kind of goods that they were using. So the entire proposal that we own in the document, he estimated that they can use 5,000 to 6,000 Italian and Filipinos that will join the expedition, and they will add 1,000 people from Malacca, and requesting 1,000 more from Portugal, Portuguese audience. No regional power could face such a force. They were quite optimistic with the amount of people that they can play together. Kiben crafted a manual to deal with Han, Batani, and Siam powers. But all he did know is wrote. And this is, for me, one of the main important parts of this really long document divided in three. That is this area. This I know from the account of the Indians in my encomienda. So now you realize what we were speaking about, like gold, encomienda, and these kind of things. He explained that this passage is extraordinary, because we have indigenous knowledge as the central point. Filipinos from his encomienda, quite far away, but sailed with the Bruneians in their own ships, and they experienced late the imperial planning. Torres recognized the passage of Pahang not merely as a shortcut. For them, it was a Heinz connecting Manila and Malacca. And for that, you need to think in a global point of view. This was the last part of a chain for the first global trade in a really global point. Because if they were using this Pahang trade, they were able to jump from the area of the Spanish to the area of the Portuguese. And that changed the global idea. That's a real globalization. This link, union, the Portuguese Indian Ocean and the Pacific and America, all together in front of this area. It embodied the dream of a unified empire around all the world, a single route of commerce, correspondence, and royal authority circling the globe. And it emerged as a world of danger. Pirates rolling the seas, Batani was fair, and Pahang offered a safer alternative. it's quite clear in the documents. The La Torre proposal is not just another fragment. It's the synthesis of the Iberian ambition. Bold encomendas, local navigations, piracy, cartography, all coverage of the Bazaar of Pahang. And this was not only a theory. You said before that they were thinking to send a really big army or navy to this area. But in 1584, Alvarado Bolaños Monsalve attempted the journey. He passed through Brunei and Pahang, and criticizing a lot the Portuguese of the area. We can speak about this later. Because he was also looking for the situation in Malaysia. He was also like a Spanish spy of the Portuguese areas that were not really under the Spanish control. And confirmed that the route along the Han River was also a really good area to expand. He proves that Torres' vision was not a fantasy. The passage of Pahang was both symbolic and also real. And with this, we jump to the conclusions, our final stop. To summarize, Han was imagined as golden, and this belief had concrete consequences. Spanish access depended on indigenous navigators, especially those linked to the encomiendas, an essential yet forgotten agency of the first global age. Cartography, from Pigafetta to Grisea, Guerreria, consistently marked Pahang for a region. It was a reference point in both latitude and longitude at the global trade route. The passage of Pahang joined to the Lhasa crisis. It represented both the dream of a unified empire and the continuity of ancient local roads. And to close, we return to the phrase of Juan de Ribera and his idea of the first global age, where Han was not a place of gold only. Thanks to these documents, we can say that it was a lighthouse for the seas. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ramon.